An evening of lively, smart conversation and jazz. Join me, John Williams, for a live taping of the Mincing Rascals podcast, Robert's Pizza, and Jazz, Wednesday, June 12th, 6 to 8 at Winter's Jazz Club in Streeterville. Tickets at WGNRadio.com/rascals. In our studio right now is Mark Locke, who is the creative producer for an exhibit called Titanic, the exhibition currently at Westfield Old Orchard Mall in Skokie. You can get tickets and find out more by clicking on the TitanicExhibition.com. This was long a pet fascination of mine because, remember, for years we did not know where the Titanic was. Would it ever be found and recovered? And then eventually all of those things happened. The idea then that some of those items would have been brought up from the ocean floor is incredible to some of us. And now I think we've sort of got the idea that those items are out there and you can actually see them and get close to them. But lucky me, I'm very close to them right now. Mark is in our studio and he's brought some of those artifacts with him. Mark, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. Such a pleasure to be with you and a pleasure to be back in Chicago with the exhibition. We were here back in 2000 at the Museum of Science and Industry. I think a million people saw that exhibition. Here we are 24 years later, and people are still fascinated by the story. And like you said, I was always fascinated, and I had this incredible opportunity that same year in 2000 to go out to the wreck site to get in one of those submersibles to go to the floor. Went down. And it's a memory that, of course,
that's a dangerous business.
Well, certainly we know from recent history that it can be. This felt very safe because this was the Mir 1 and the Mir 2, the Russian submersibles. Some of your listeners may know those from Cameron's film at the beginning when they were really more treasure hunting than anything. That's where it was more of a fictional film. Remember, they pulled up the safe in Cameron's film and cut off the hinge as well.
But you went down and saw the Titanic.
Saw the Titanic.
And what's that like? What do you see? How visible is it, and what are the feelings one has?
Well, first of all, when you get inside this submersible, it's like sitting in the front seat of a small car with two other people for the next 12 hours. And you take this descent that lasts 2 hours and 15 minutes. The bright blue ocean fades to black very quickly. And for the next 2 hours, you're in the dark. And when you reach the ocean floor at 12,500 feet, feel a very light touchdown. And the pilot, a Russian pilot, he signaled to me to put my face up to my porthole right in front of me. I did. I heard a click first. Then the lights came up, and there was the bow of the Titanic, that famous shot that we're all very familiar with. The ocean floor at that depth, very still most of the time and very clear. So the 8 hours I spent on the bottom was not only exciting, as you can imagine, but very emotional. I mean, this was the site of a great tragedy.
Were you able to maneuver around? Did you see the hole in the Titanic?
Oh, yes. Now, the light may be 30 feet in front of you. So as you move along the Titanic, the hull and the stern, some of your listeners know, the ship basically broke in half at the surface. And when it fell to the ocean floor, those two sections are now separated by about a half a mile. But I remember that bow moment, kind of going right over the railing, looking down into the cargo hatch along the main mast that has now fallen onto the ship. One of the most vivid memories is going by Captain Smith's cabin. And it's almost like a movie set because one of the walls, the exterior wall, is gone. So you look inside his cabin. There's the doorway to the bridge. The bathtub, his bed, his brass bed. And remember, he had retired from the bridge just moments before Titanic scraped along the iceberg. So to know that he was in that cabin, and when he felt, because he was the most experienced captain on the seas, when he felt that shiver of his ship, he immediately was on the bridge, took command, and within not too many minutes, knew that his ship was going to sink, knew that there weren't enough lifeboats on board.
You were able to see the bed and some of the artifacts in his stateroom on the boat?
Yes. Now, the brass bed, portions of it, and you can still see that with photographs today.
It's amazing they survived the descent and time.
Yes, exactly.
Still there.
Well, and the artifacts, the exhibitions that have recovered artifacts on the ocean floor, and that was like the one we did at MSI, those artifacts recovered from the debris field. So if you will, when the ship broke in half, it was like a small town and its many of its the things in that town or on that ship fell to the ocean floor outside of the ship itself. Not in the case of that brass bed.
Really? Any human remains there?
Nothing that, of course, that I saw. And you hear, you know, I was out there. I sat at the feet of some of the great experts of Titanic. And they all talk about how no human remains have ever been seen. Something about the makeup of the water at that depth. Those that actually were trapped in the ship as the ship went down.
Right. Are there any fortunes? I mean, besides the collectabilia of it all, was there gold? Were there coins? Was there jewels on the ship?
Well,
and have those been captured?
Some of the in that collection, which is not the collection at Old Orchard, and we can talk about that in a minute. But of course, the rich and famous of the world were on board the ship. The richest man on board was John Jacob Astor, and Ida and. I'm forgetting his first name now. The Strausses were on board. So you knew they were traveling with valuable things. It's long been talked about that the purser's office, where a lot of those valuables would have been checked, that's inside the ship. And the ship's never been penetrated. That's against the law, if you will. That wreck site is overseen by a court in Norfolk, Virginia. So only the objects that are recovered from the ocean floor, the debris field, are the ones that have ever been on display.
Including at the MSI 20 years ago?
20 years ago, yeah.
And including what is going to be at Old Orchard?
Old Orchard is different. We have this incredible collector from Canada. His name is Rene Bergeron. He's been fascinated with Titanic since he was a little boy when he saw A Night to Remember. That was the great feature film that preceded Cameron's film. And he's put this incredible collection together, some of those we can talk about today, recovered the night of the sinking, recovered on those that were deceased, the bodies that were picked up days later after the sinking. And then remember, Titanic was part of two other sister ships, the Olympic, which sailed before Titanic, almost identical, and the Britannic, which sailed after Titanic. And some of those, the White Star Line China, the Crystal, those sorts of things are part of this exhibition.
Right. Wow. The stories that Mark Locke tells, creative producer for Titanic, the exhibition, currently at Westfield Old Orchard in Skokie. How long is the exhibit going to be there?
Well, we thought it would be a period of about 6 weeks, 8 weeks. We've now extended to July 7th, into the summertime. It's just been gratifying how many folks are coming, how many folks are making a day of it, and so many things to do with the mall, of course, but the exhibition.
Do you have a star of the exhibition? Is there something everybody wants to see?
Well, besides the artifacts, the real pieces of history, of course, it's a very theatrical exhibition. Room recreations, a first-class parlor suite, the grand staircase, a third-class cabin. You walk into the boiler room, the guys that knew something was wrong, the first contact, if you will, or the first notice of the break in the ship was down in the boiler room. So you feel what that was like. You walk out onto the promenade deck with the stars. Everything was fine that night. And then, you know, that was yesterday at 11:40 in the evening when Titanic scraped along the iceberg.
What was the biggest difference between a cruise ship then and a cruise ship now?
Wow. Not a cruise ship expert. Certainly, I'll give you one. There are enough lifeboats on board now for every passenger aboard today's cruise ships.
And that wasn't an oversight, but it was determined that the ship was unsinkable and therefore there was no need for the lifeboats. They weren't even easily dispensed into the water, were they?
A couple things. There was no rule, no law at the time, if you can believe it, to have enough lifeboats on board. There was a publication of the day called Shipbuilder Magazine because of these watertight doors that separated sections of the ship. They called the ship practically unsinkable. The designer never said that. The White Star Line never said that, but they took great pride in hearing that. The original design had actually more lifeboats, not enough for everybody, which seems incredible, but he's kind of a villain in the story. The chairman of the White Star Line, Bruce Ismay, didn't like the view from the boat deck for the first-class passengers, so he had even more lifeboats removed. So obviously, if there were enough lifeboats, almost everyone would have been saved.
What did you bring with us today?
Well, these are incredible pieces. This is Spode China. And as we talked about earlier, the White Star Line had China for all their ships, just with the White Star Line logo. Nothing aboard the Titanic said Titanic, but this particular pattern was made just for the Titanic.
Hold that up a little over that screen so I can see.
All right,
see
and
if you don't mind.
Yeah, this is the saucer.
It's that dark navy
small
blue
teacup with the cobalt blue with the gold. Yeah,
yeah, cobalt blue, right?
Right.
And then the gold, and then a white center on the saucer, and then on the cup, it's cobalt blue with kind of a gold trim on the top.
And you see the spode identification, which was the great china of the day.
I know I'm not supposed to touch it, but if I could just hold. Oops, I'm sorry.
Great.
My bad.
I knew this was a bad idea. What are we thinking? Everything is fine for your listeners. What was amazing about this, Titanic on April 10th left Southampton, went to Cherbourg, departed Southampton later that day, and then on to Queenstown. One of the first class passengers only went from Southampton to Queenstown.
Really?
Yeah, as designed, didn't have any foreshadowing of what was to come. But they took this china off the ship.
Oh, that's how it was recovered.
Yeah.
Or at least on
display.
That's
why we have this, yes. And that's why the collector, of course, jumped at the opportunity to obtain this for part of the collection.
Has there been a secondary market for that stuff?
Well, there are collectors. And our particular collector is so, you know, I guess it could be done, not in the case of Renee, for financial reasons, as a collector sometimes do. But Renee, it's such a passion for him to collect these things, these pieces of history, and put together the largest collection of artifacts.
But I would imagine that's worth many, many thousands of dollars.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
What else do you have there?
Well, this is a piece of the famous Grand Staircase. We all know it from the film. This is a piece of molding. The Grand Staircase pieces.
Looks like a triangular piece of crown molding, dark colored wood.
That's right, with a detail there. And we're all familiar with the grandness, if you will, of the Grand Staircase.
Show that to my friend Sarah.
There you go, Sarah.
Sarah Tiemann is taking video and pictures for our podcast of this as well.
Now, what happened here is when the Minia, a cable-laying ship, was hired by the White Star Line to go out and recover bodies days after the ship sank, it recovered some things from the ocean surface.
Yeah, sure.
And this piece of molding, it was larger at the time than the one I'm showing you now, was recovered by the Minia, and the head carpenter, a gentleman named C.W. Parker, took that and made it into a frame. That's why you see the 45 degree, made it into a frame, and it's a tribute to those lost. He was right there as all these bodies were recovered.
The bodies recovered, you've mentioned them a couple of times.
Yep.
I presume those are floating on the surface and not recovered down below?
That's right, all on the surface.
Any idea how many bodies were snatched from the water?
Boy, I should know that, John. I'm sorry. I know, you know, there were 2,200 folks on board. 1,500 were lost. Many were never found, never identified. Some were identified. And, of course, that was fortunate for the families to have some sort of closure. One of those families, and we're just taking a photo of that, received in July, after the sinking in April, this gold swimming medal. And on one side, it has the date of June 1909. But on the other side, the family then engraved it because they received it days and weeks after their son perished. He was on his way to the United States to visit a friend, one of 15 children. And on his when he was recovered, his body was recovered, and he was buried at sea, but his personal effects were returned to the family. And one of those things that obviously he found very valuable was this gold swimming medal that he won when he was probably 9 years old. He was on the ship when he was 19 years old.
Just a couple minutes left.
Yeah.
Anything else that would be surprising to me or surprised you about the Titanic and the remains?
Well, not the remains as much as just, if I make it personal here, how moved I've been about this story. You know, I had those 24 years ago when I first started to design the exhibition, I knew as much about about the story as the next person. But over the years, obviously, this incredible opportunity to dive the ship. But as I mentioned, to sit at the feet of the experts, those that really know, I will leave you with this. The youngest person on board the ship, her name was Melvina Dean, 9 weeks old. She was handed from her father to her mother, who was standing in a lifeboat inside of a burlap potato sack so that she would be safe. The lifeboat was lowered. The father stood back. Many years later, Melvina Dean came to the exhibition in London.
Mm.
She was the last survivor as well. Not coincidentally, because, you know, she was the youngest, but she wasn't necessarily going to be the last survivor. But she was delightful. She told me she never saw the movies, never really read anything. She didn't remember anything, but she didn't want to think what her mother and her brother and her father went through. So those personal stories.
Did her mother survive? The father handed the baby to the mother in the lifeboat.
Mother and brother. Her brother was in the lifeboat as well.
So those three survived.
Those three survived. The father perished in the sinking.
I understand women and children first.
Yeah.
But in an era where there's lifeboats for everybody, and you go to the muster station and they do the emergency drill, it's hard to imagine that anybody would be deemed perishable, you know, by rule or by protocol. I would not have blamed the father for getting on the boat. It seemed like some of the lifeboats did not have, weren't at capacity anyway.
No.
It would seem to me like they could have accommodated more people.
Yes. People felt, because it took 2.5 hours to sink, and because it wasn't initially something that seemed urgent or an emergency, and there was criticism about the White Star Line crew not demanding to fill those lifeboats. Because you're right, some of the early lifeboats went out half full. And there weren't enough to begin with anyway. One of my favorite Chicago stories that we tell, because 73 folks were on their way to Chicago aboard the Titanic. And Ida and Jean Hippock were aboard, mother and daughter. And they weren't going to get in a lifeboat. But John Jacob Astor, richest man on board, after loading his wife onto a lifeboat, really encouraged those two to get on. And because he did, they survived. Just one of the many Chicago stories in the exhibition as well.
The 112th anniversary of the Titanic sinking is today. There's an exhibit in Skokie, and you should check out Titanic, the exhibition at Westfield Old Orchard Mall. You can click on thetitanicexhibition.com. Mark Locke, you're always a good storyteller. Thanks for coming in.
Such a pleasure to be with you. Thanks, John.